beginning of this year, we set out to review the Austin Powers trilogy because we love watching all these films growing up. In 1997, we had the very first one that we loved, and we talked about it just a little while ago. In 1999, we got the sequel, Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me. Yeah, baby. And then in 2002, we got Austin Powers, Goldmember. But now, we're going to be checking out that second film and discussing whether or not it's as good, worse, or about the same as the first one right here on another exciting edition of A Cast of the Past, with a brand new episode available every single Sunday with yours truly. My name is Juan Velas. I am from San Juan, Puerto Rico. Joining me from London, Ontario, we have Keith Hamilton. Now, Keith, in your case, you love that first movie. So after having watched that one, what was your expectation going into this one?
That movie was shagadelic, baby. Yeah. But going into this one, the Spy Who Shagged Me was my favorite growing up. So my expectations were extremely high for this one, because like I mentioned in our previous episode, I love all three of these movies. And as a kid, this was cream a la crop to me. Like, this was just that perfect mix. And I don't know if it held up as much as I remember.
I'm looking forward to this discussion because it's very rare that we have this internal conflict, because the three of us, because the other person is from Boston, Massachusetts, Ryan McNulty. But before I even bring it to you, man, as I was watching this movie, I'm like, ooh, this is going to be an interesting discussion between the three of us. Having watched it, Ryan, do you think that the opinions are going to be maybe a little bit different than we thought they would be?
I think so. I'm pretty sure we all kind of came in remembering these movies as a kid and thinking, oh yeah, the second one is definitely the best one. The third one, maybe it got a little too crazy. But my opinion definitely changed. It had been quite a while since I've seen this. So I am quite interested to get your guys' take as well.
Absolutely. And everybody watching and listening, you can be part of the conversation by checking out acastofthepast.com/discord. We have a movie channel. We have a video game channel. If you like Pokemon, you like that TCG that's available there, Lego, it continues to grow. So basically, if you want to save your wallet, don't join the Discord. But if you want to check out a pretty awesome community, you can do that for sure. Now, just as a refresher, when it comes to the critically acclaimed part of this, so the first movie is the one with the highest ratings on Rotten Tomatoes. So that got a 71, the second one got a 52%, and the third one got a 53%. So those two are almost neck and neck. Starting it off with Keith, because I'm really dying to just know your overall impression. Talk to me about that roller coaster ride that was watching the movie with the high expectations, and the more that it went on, maybe some concerns started piling up.
Roller coaster is definitely the way to describe that movie, because that's exactly what it was going through it. I started out with these high expectations going back, and I was able to quote it as we were watching it. Like, it's one of those movies for me that as it goes on, I know the line that's going to happen before it happens. I love it that much. But as the movie continues, it, like, you're going up and up and up and up and up, and like there's a couple of bumps in the road, but near the middle of it, you're starting to sit there and wonder, like, oh, I don't think this is good anymore. Like, I don't think this is as good as I remember it. And it feels like they're going to the same wells over and over in the same movie. It's like you know that friend that at a party, you know, back when we could have those and have gatherings where he would like tell a joke and it would be funny, because he's a pretty funny guy. He's not the guy that can light up a room, but he's got a few good jokes in his arsenal. He tells that joke, everybody laughs, but then he tells the same joke to different people, but you overhear it and it's not as funny the same time.
It's the worst.
That is the Spy Who Shagged Me to me. That is what the watching experience of that movie is like for me.
Ryan, talk to me, baby.
I definitely agree with Keith there. What I would say the biggest difference to me was, aside from originality, you know, the first one's always going to be the most original. The first one, I think, had a good mix of, you know, having, it doesn't have to have the strongest story, but enough of a story to keep to keep everything moving, right? And then you had the relationship between Austin and Vanessa. I thought it was a good blend of comedy. You have the love story, you have the James Bond parody plot going. It all worked well and had a nice balance to it. This one, it was like they just barely had a plot to keep things going. Like, it was barely anything. There wasn't really, I mean, I know they don't want to retread with the love story, but it was definitely a much weaker, the interactions, but it was barely anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was barely anything. And the jokes, there were some jokes that land really well and still hold up, but I feel like there's a lot more jokes in here that are like a product of their time that did not age well at all. You know, the whole, like, you're all that in a bag of chips, all that, like, those were some ones that you're just like, ooh, you know, I remember when that was funny 10 years ago, but it's not really funny anymore.
Ryan, that was not 10 years ago. I'm just going to say 15 years ago. Yeah, Ryan.
Even then, it was very much like, it wasn't, I didn't even see it as a product of its time and more of like a, oh, you know that thing that made you laugh in the first one? Well, we're going to do that again. You know, we're going to tell that
Times
joke
10.
In just a little bit of a different
point,
way.
Like the whole zip it thing versus like when he did the shh in the first
the
movie.
Whole movie
to
exactly.
Scott.
The whole movie was that, basically. Like, can we please just refer to the beginning of the film, which I completely forgot that that's how they wrote Vanessa off because... Like, I had forgotten how the transition, you know, first we had Vanessa, and then we have Felicity here, played by Heather Graham, which I think is, like, a very odd casting choice for this type of film. But they start the film literally where the other one left off, right? So, like, they had gotten married and all of that. Oh, Vanessa turned out to be a robot, tries to kill Austin. She's destroyed. It turns out everybody knew that she was a robot. They just didn't tell him. He's single, baby. Yeah. Then the movie starts. And wow. What if a movie did that now? Maybe another movie has done that now. I don't know. People will be just lambasting the movie now.
I don't think so. I'm actually going to defend them for once and just saying it was a movie that it doesn't take that kind of stuff seriously. Like, they make fun of the time travel and how the time travel in this movie makes absolutely no sense. And you could tell, like, it, you know, they needed to move on. They wanted to have a new girl because it's like just like James Bond. They always have a new like love interest in every movie. So it was just like a cheap, quick way to write her off. So but it's like because it's not taking itself seriously in the way that Basil is just like, oh, yeah, we knew all along, you know, it's just like kind of a cheap way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. This movie is an interesting like case in point of where does that line live where you're allowed to do that? Because like, yeah, that's okay. It's fine. You know, they're just going to not take itself too seriously. It's a comedy after all, right? But where's that point where they don't take themselves seriously? Like it, that's just the answer for everything to a point where it becomes a detriment to the movie.
Yeah. See, I'll agree that. It's probably the whole Vanessa thing being a fembot was probably a worse like offender compared to maybe the whole time travel stuff, right? Because how did they get a time machine? How did they get the other half of the time machine in 1967? You know, they just have Rob Lowe saying, I got your message from the future. How did he get the message from the future? Like,
and see, those things are awesome because look, this is not just a parody film. It's a comedy film. It's both, right? So they can get away with a whole lot of stuff. The thing is, this is a parody of a James Bond film and also a parody of Austin Powers because the more that the movie kept progressing, I'm like, which one are you making fun of? Like James Bond or yourself? Because there were so many times that I'm like, dude, I get it, man. It's like when a band only had like two greatest hit songs and then the concert keeps going, they're like, oh crap, people, we're gonna have to like just do some repeats or something because those are the three songs people give a damn about. They did it so damn much, although like going pace by pace. So yeah, that beginning part was a little rough, but then you want to talk about dating this film, Jerry motherfucking Springer. So that's how the movie starts, right? Let's keep in mind.
And also Seinfeld, like you were about to say.
Yeah, almost. So, you know, Dr. Evil was technically still frozen as of the end of this the first film, right? That, and this is going to be the revenge story. So Scott Evil, which, like, I still just love the name Scott Evil. It's just so basic, but just so great. And the fact that it's Seth Green. He comes here to Jerry Springer to talk about the fact that, yeah, it's like, hey, yeah, my father is just an evil dude trying to take out, you know, trying to take over the world. Then Jerry Springer pulls out the guest, and it is the unfrozen Dr. Evil. We spring into a fight between Evil and Springer himself. And that right there is like a nugget of gold, because anybody that didn't grow up watching Jerry Springer would look at that and be like, oh, that show cannot have been that ridiculous. It's like, that's what Jerry Springer was.
Turns out that was all Jerry Springer, minus fighting Jerry. That was the show.
Yeah, normally nobody. Yeah, they usually had that fame. I forget what the security guard's name was.
His name was Steve.
Well, I love because he got his own show. Yeah. Right? He got his own show eventually. But yeah, that is definitely, if you grew up in the late 90s and you remember a Jerry Springer show, it was a great like encapsulation of it. And that was actually one of the high points of the movie, was when Dr. Evil just gets into a fight with the Klansman and then with Jerry Springer. Like, it was just so ridiculous. And just like the bleeps made it even funnier. So that was definitely a high point.
Absolutely. And I think review-wise, this movie is going to be so different because it is so similar to the first one, right? But then there are a lot of things that, let me know what you think about this. I think the first movie is in every way better than this one, but people remember this one more because of the characters. Because in this one, we are introduced to two of, like, forget about Austin Powers. Like, these are two, like, if Funko Pops were to come out in the early 2000s, Fat Bastard and Mini-Me would be among the first two Funko Pops that would come out.
I guarantee they exist. I guarantee they
are. Oh, no, they exist now. I'm saying, like, if back in the day, like, if that were to come out, because they are two of the most iconic characters, yet I don't think, aside from that, there was a lot added to the table. So, starting with Keith, I would love to know, let's have a discussion first about Mini-Me, right? I think this character, you know, played by Vern Troyer. I mean, who didn't know about Mini-Me? And then he got, like, I forget how many reality shows he was in. But with you, Keith, what did you think about the introduction of the 1/8 sized Dr. Evil?
That was actually an aspect of the movie that I really enjoyed for its ridiculousness, but it's kind of going back to the same joke, right? Like, oh, Dr. Evil, we made you a son in the last movie. Well, in this one, Dr. Evil, we made you another son, except he's just you this time. But the way that they dehumanized him in this movie, I found it to be hilarious. Like, how he's like how they squirt him with the water gun and he's like this invincible little dude in the fight later in the movie. I loved the character Mini-Me and that relationship of, like, just showing how much of a, like, how evil Dr. Evil is. Like, oh yeah, I don't care about you anymore, Scott. Yeah, I got a better son now, so now I love Mini-Me more.
Yeah, this movie really is the Mini-Me and Fat Bastard show. Other than that, everything else you can pretty much forget. But Mini-Me, Vern Troyer had, like, just a phenomenal performance as being just this hilarious, like, clone of Dr. Evil. Like, when he does the quotation marks at the same time, like, it's so, just all the little subtle things are just so hilarious. And I think Mini-Me, like, alone pretty much saves this movie and makes it worth watching.
I agree. I think it was a very, very smart choice, minus that one line where Mini-Me just doesn't talk, where he just makes sounds and ease, and that's the extent of his character, because it makes that one moment just so much more impactful.
And it's kind of interesting because the whole movie is so loud, right? The characters, yet Mini-Me is arguably the most basic character within the whole bunch. But that's why it works, because it's like when everybody's talking, this character is not able to speak. So it makes those little things like the quotations, That first part where Scott says something and then he's immediately trying to pull like the kill Scott button, but then Dr. Evil stops him. Like, that's the stuff that's awesome. And I don't think they leaned into that nearly enough because they focus so much on the plot, and we'll get to that a little bit later. Then I'm like, man, you're focusing on the part that people don't give a crap about in these movies. They care about
the
characters.
You think there was focus on the plot?
I mean, yeah. But we'll get to a little bit more of that. Now, talk to me first with Keith about Fat Bastard. This man that, as they go back through time and all of that, right? This man who clearly is a spy, right? Clearly, he's just like the master of espionage, is going to try and steal Austin Powers' mojo, baby. Yeah, baby. Keith, talk to me about that.
Well, I agree that Mini-Me was great. This was the character that I, oh my god, every time Fat Bastard talked was just the funniest moment for me. I love that character so much. And like, just how simple it is. The fact that his name is Fat Bastard, and that is his character. He is a... You are one fat bastard.
Say the line, Keith. Say the line. Everybody knows.
Oh, the... I ain't a baby!
Get in my belly!
I'm having a bit of a hard time because through this, like, I immediately watched Goldmember afterwards, so I'm trying to remember now, which turns out to be a horrible mistake because I'm trying to remember, like, which line was from which movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was about to say, oh, I didn't have any carn, but I think that's from the next one. But yeah, just how simple, and like, the way that they build Fat Bastard up in the movie where he's, like you said, he's this master of espionage and he's out there to steal Austin Powers' mojo. Dr. Evil hired him and he's just a big fat Scottish guy that played the bagpipes, knocked everybody out, and then ate afterwards. Like, that is the extent of Fat Bastard's character, and it is just so good.
And like, we have to point out, you know, for those that haven't seen this, it's like, it's also played by Mike Myers. So kind of like going back to Eddie Murphy and other incredible comedians that can play a lot of the same character. It's like, this whole movie is just Mike Myers battling Mike Myers and also Mike Myers at the same time.
Yeah, as if two characters wasn't enough. He had to add another one. And then, yeah, he takes it up a notch and Goldmember.
Because that's how it has to go.
Yep. You got to up the ante, right? He had to challenge Eddie Murphy for playing the most characters in one movie.
And then Tyler Perry came along and was like, yeah, I just ruined your whole career.
Hold my beer.
Hold my characters.
Serious question. Did they ever make a film where it's just a bunch of actors that notoriously play a lot of different characters at the same time? And the whole movie is just like three actors, but it's actually like 40 characters. I would love to know if anything like that existed or exists, because I really don't know.
They should do that.
I mean, maybe no, it's like ran its course.
They shouldn't. That sounds awful. Yeah. What are you talking about?
But Ryan, take me back to 1999 or whenever you first like you were exposed to the Fat Bastard. What did you think about the character then versus watching the movie now?
I thought he was funny then. I mean, I've always thought like they did such a good job with like the makeup and everything. It's like, I didn't even realize it was Mike Myers the first time I watched it. But also, I realized, I don't remember if this came out before Shrek or not, but this is basically like PG-13 to rated R Shrek, if you think about it, because he's basically doing the Shrek voice.
You are 100% wow. Correct.
You know? Huh.
You could hear Shrek going, I want my baby back, baby back, baby back, baby back.
See, that was another joke I feel like did not age well because, like, anyone who saw that today that didn't grow up with those commercials.
I mean,
I don't know.
Keith and I are wrestling
it's
fans.
It's still funny.
And even, like,
it's still
literally
really
this
funny.
Year, there
oh,
was a joke about
oh,
that
yeah.
still. So,
yeah. True.
And The Office. Did, I mean, The I Office is still relevant.
Yeah. They did bring that commercial back. I forgot about that. But I thought, even as a kid, I thought he was really funny because, I mean, there's a lot of poop jokes in there. There's a lot of farts. So it's like, it's got the kid humor in there, you know? I'll never forget, like, the, I got a crap on deck that will choke a donkey, you know? Like, it's, there's just a lot of memorable lines, as absurd as they are.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the biggest revelations I had watching it, was I totally understand why this was my favorite as a kid, just because it's, they lean so much more into like the poop humor, and in not like, like, yes, there was poop humor, that's hard to say, in the first movie, but it was kind of done in a smart way. Like that whole toilet scene, like it kind of goes over your head as a kid, where they're much more direct with their, I have a poop on deck that could choke a donkey in this one. And I think that's where, like, the one thing that I would give this movie over the first one and even the third one is that this is a much more quotable movie, where while the, like, the first one might be a better movie, I can see why this one really took the franchise to the next level, because just almost everything in this movie got turned into a quote or like a gag or a bit, because it was so easy to do so and it was so layered out that way, where they just hit the joke button. Like, they, instead of in the first one, they were just touching the joke button, they were just hammering it down in this one, just trying to get all the jokes out there and all the lines out there.
I would have loved to be in the production meeting for this one, because with the first one, it's like, you know, we talked a little bit about this in that episode, which is they didn't know if it was going to be successful or not, right? But here it's like they know they have a cast. Like, they know people are going to be going to the films, they're going to be checking this out. So the whole process of, like, how quotable. I mean, every single time that Austin Powers, Mini-Me, who doesn't talk, but the way he acts, it's like every character serves a very, very specific purpose. And the one character that I really do think just never clicked with me, it was just so weird, especially because I think Vanessa was so good on the first one, just like the way she was integrated, is Felicity, played by Heather Graham. And she literally just takes the exact same spot from Vanessa, which is even weirder. It's like they're not even trying to, like, justify it. It's like, you know, because they're going back in time, right? They got to go from the 90s to the 60s, because the whole point, and Scott continues to be my favorite character in this, just this whole film, is that Dr. Evil thinks the reason that Austin Powers continues to be better than him is because of his mojo, which is his unbelievable sex drive. Keith knows all about that. So the whole process is, hey,
No,
we gotta
you're
go.
Mistaking me for the sex machine Ryan McNulty.
Right. Keith, I'm right, sorry. Course.
Hashtag yeah. Shagadelic Ryan exactly. McNulty.
People, Ryan is a sexy beast. I mean, my goodness. Ryan, do you consider yourself a sexy beast? Talk to me about that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at all these Pokemon plushes. I'm such a cool,
let me ask you, Ryan, if I were to develop a time travel, if I were to develop a time traveling device, when would be the best time to go back and steal your mojo?
I'd probably say college, like late last 2 years.
Oh, yeah. The late night TCG sessions, if you know what I mean.
I'm the wrong person if you're looking for some mojo, I'll tell you that.
But I love the whole thing in the movie that, you know, Scott says, if you're going to go back in time, why not just kill him? And that's where they go, like, the shushing. But the fact that Scott's always there saying, just like, look, this is how you solve the damn thing. That is, like, the one constant in the two films that we covered so far that I absolutely loved. And then, yeah, we go back, and that's where we encounter Felicity. So, Ryan, in your case, what did you think about her character? And also just Heather Graham, knowing what she's acted in and around that time, it just never clicked with me, at least with, like, in my opinion. What about you?
Yeah, it was definitely more apparent watching it now. I never really thought twice about it when I first saw it way back in, you know, 1999. But yeah, she just doesn't have the same chemistry, I think, with Austin Powers. And they just don't do enough to really build that relationship. It just immediately goes into, like, oh, hey, they meet each other. They have that action scene, which was pretty funny, with the lady who wouldn't die, and then they have, like, a montage like they did in the first movie, and then all of a sudden it's like they're supposed to be in love. It just was, like, way more rushed. And I understand they spend a lot of time on the relationship between Vanessa and Austin in the first movie, so I think they didn't want to spend as much time for this one, but it's noticeably weaker.
Mm-hmm. I would argue that even though I agree with everything you say, Ryan, that makes her the most, like, dedicated tribute to the James Bond franchise from this entire movie, like, because just, yeah, she's just a Bond girl that is there.
Damn, that's a deep
that's
point.
That's about it.
I don't know if that was intentional, though.
Oh, there's no way it was intentional, but that's how, that yeah. to me, that's how it came off.
Unintentionally a more accurate Bond girl.
Exactly. And then you want to talk about 90s films? You put Rob Lowe in the freaking film. That man defines, like, pick any movie that you love, like comedy film and all that. So, like, you put freaking Rob Lowe in there. And I love the fact that, you know, they're going back to the past. So, number two, he's not the same character, even though some of the other ones stay exactly the same. And those are the little things that I love. But you put Rob Lowe in here, and it's a pretty basic role that he plays, right? It's not something that, like, there's
he
a lot to discuss
do
here.
He doesn't do anything in this movie at all.
No.
I never realized it.
Yeah.
I never realized how little, like, I remember I was like, oh yeah, Rob Lowe's number two in this movie. And then he just, like, doesn't do anything except cry when he gets hit with the globe. That's basically the only thing that happens.
Yeah, I think he only has like one or two scenes of speaking lines even. I remembered his part being more significant than it was, but yeah, very much not.
The other character that they just had to go down the well or down the cliff in this case is Mustafa, played by Will Ferrell, who in the first movie yeah. at the very beginning, you know,
again,
they kill him off.
He's in two of these, and I didn't realize
right?
it. It's
right?
so weird.
What did you think about them literally just redoing almost every single joke? I guarantee you, if we made like a checkbox of the first film and be like, are they going to make this joke in the second? It's like almost the overwhelming majority of them got done. And I wish, is Mustafa in the third one? I honestly don't remember.
I don't think so.
No,
if I remember.
He's not.
Because he technically.
Will Ferrell got big by then.
Yeah. He's like, nah, probably. I ain't doing that gold member.
Yeah, I think that was around the time he was either like the biggest thing in SNL or he was just leaving. But yeah, based on this, he would technically be dead in the past and in the future, right? So I don't think they could have him.
I mean, anything's possible, Ryan, if you put your mind to it. But what did you think about them doing just this little throwback scene to the first film? And once again, he just doesn't die. A lot of characters just have trouble dying in this film.
Yeah, I thought it was funny. I think they did it in a little bit of a different way. I appreciate that they were, you know, there was the whole thing of where if he gets asked a question three times, he always caves. But then they get into a situation where they're like discussing the technicality of it. Little things like that, I think, are always pretty funny. So that part I thought was good. And even back then, I actually remember recognizing that it was Will Ferrell in the movies because I did watch SNL a lot kind of in that era. And yeah, this was like right before he became like a big deal. So he was playing kind of like these really small roles.
Yeah. That part about the whole three questions thing was really funny and really good. But then it feels like they just went back to that same well. It's like, oh, well, we have this character again. We have to do the same joke. And I don't really think they changed it up enough to make it better.
And what's
yeah,
surprising
let's go
is,
with better.
You know, this film only came out 2 years before the first one, like after the first one. And I think if this would be a movie that came out like 5-6 years after, right? It's like you've had enough time for things to cool down. But a lot of the time I was just thinking to myself, like, damn, they pretty much copied and pasted a whole lot of stuff. Another character in this actress, Kristen Johnson, like I loved her role in Third Rock from the Sun. Did you guys watch that TV show?
I did.
I love that show.
I actually,
so much.
When I saw her in this movie, I was like, who is this? She looks super familiar. So I had to look her up and I was like, oh yeah, Third Rock from the Sun. That's where I recognize her.
What's the character's name, Ryan?
Ivana Humpalot.
Keith, can you repeat it? Let's see who sounds sexier now.
Ivana Humpalot.
Oh my goodness. I think Keith is a sex stallion now.
Well, I didn't know that this was a competition. You just
too late, man. First
you just
impressions.
Changed the rules mid question. That's not fair.
That's part of what happens, man. But
it's all right. I really didn't want to say it like that anyway. So we can move on.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, you have to compensate for my lacking of mojo compared to you. Yeah. So, you know, you had to even the playing field because you've just got so much mojo that I can't compete naturally.
That's true.
Shagadelic Ryan McNulty.
What would you say this film, if you were to just think about
Can I file a complaint to the HR department for sexual harassment?
There is no HR department.
Keith is
the HR department.
We got that type of budget. People, support Keith. Talk to me about this film. What is the best takeaway? What is the absolute thing that you're like, this is objectively the best part, the best thing that maybe it even exceeded the first film? Starting with Keith, what's your biggest takeaway from this one?
My biggest takeaway would probably be it's a tough one, but I'm going to have to go with the characters in this one. It's the areas of the movie where they didn't have the opportunity to tread the same ground. I think that's where it was the most successful. Like we talked about with Mini-Me and Fat Bastard. And then even though we said like I've been pretty negative on the jokes, there are a few sections of the movie where they just nail it. Like it feels like the first movie with just like the quick, dumb kind of smart humor. Like when they're naming the project in this one and it's about how Dr. Alan Parsons made this device. So we're going to call it the Alan Parsons Project. And then Scott calls him out on it about how it's being how that was a band 10 years later. Like that stuff was really good, but they just go a little bit into the old jokes a little too much.
Yeah. I think it comes down to what the Austin Powers series probably does best and why it's still remembered to this day is it has fun characters. And like I said, the first movie, I think, strikes a great balance between story, like comedy, and fun characters. Whereas the second one, it's more of the thing that they hit best was introducing new characters that were fun. And that was Mini-Me and Fat Bastard. After that, I would say pretty much everything else is inferior to the first one. But people really remember and find those characters very funny. So it's very much remembered to this day. And also, although I was never big on this, people really loved the whole Just the Two of Us song with Mini-Me and Dr. Evil.
Okay.
I always liked it, but I wasn't as obsessed with it. But it was like everyone would listen to that back in the day, like all the time. And I just kind of got...
That's my flip. That's my other... Yeah. My not-so-great thing will be dedicated to two segments in this movie that involved music in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Okay, we're getting there. That's fine. I'll save my point then.
Oh, we are getting there. Yeah. For me, my favorite part really does have to be the consistency of inconsistency in many ways, where a lot of these characters kind of cancel each other out, right? Like the whole concept with improv in a lot of films is like you never say no, right? So that way the plot keeps going. But then here, you know, you have Scott and then you have Mini-Me and they don't get along. But then you have Fat Bastard and then you also have that relationship with Heather Graham's character, Mike Myers' character. But then the whole process that like Austin, because he lost his mojo, doesn't want to get into a relationship. And that leads to like a very awkward sexual encounter, which Ryan knows about that, right? With like Fat Bastard.
Thanks. Where, like, thanks.
No, I'm sorry. I love you, man.
No, but, I do, but thanks.
Okay. Hey.
That's for a Cast of the Past After Dark.
Exactly. Yeah. We could talk about that on the Discord.
Cast to the Past.
No, that doesn't
We'll work on that.
No, it doesn't work. But literally, Fat Bastard has a tracker shoved up his ass. It legitimately happens, and it is not often that I can bring that into the podcast, and it makes absolute sense. So I like the fact that there's a lot of conflict. The problem, and this is where we begin the transition with this film into the not-so-great things, is they don't let anything breathe. And I get that this is a comedy, but the funniest parts of this film, it's like I'm laughing and they take it away. Like Scott and Mini-Me, I love that chemistry, but they don't really experiment a lot with it, right? It's like you have two sons. Like that in itself can be a whole freaking movie, right? That, it's like just blow that out of the water. You have
Scott Evil is a great actor, right? Like Seth Green. Yet you proceed, kind of like Rob Lowe, to not really use these people other than like a light introduction. And then the part of the film that I just hated was Dr. Evil. I'm just going to say it right now. I think Dr. Evil is easily the worst part of this film because they crossed the line. It's like, you know, every character, as outrageous as they can become, it's like when you cross that line, you killed off the character. When they finally get the mojo, and that I can never get her name right, Frau, right?
Frau,
Minnie Sterling's character. It's like he drinks the mojo, and then he Dr. Evil gets jiggy with it with Minnie Sterling's character. The way that all happened, I'm like, you did it. You actually crossed that line that just, one thing, it's like outrageous, crazy. It's like, come on now, man. Where do you go from there? Realistically,
character development takes a backseat to making moments.
Exactly. And then after that, it's like, dude, I don't give a crap about you. It's like, I don't really give a damn about you. What did you think, Keith and then Ryan, about that whole process with like Dr. Evil's, not evolution, but devolution, or just like, I don't know. I didn't like it. That's the thing,
I think,
Keith.
It's the shining star example of them being in on their own joke, where they took the things, like, they wanted Dr. Evil to be so much of a character that he became a parody of what he was in that first movie. Because really, in that first movie, there's a big difference between the two of them that, like, International Man of Mystery is a fast movie. Like, that moves really fast, but you never really feel the speed of it, just because they still, like, they have the highs and lows of jokes in that movie, and you're able to breathe a little bit between humor, where they're just throwing jokes at you left and right in this movie, and it becomes overwhelming, like you said, Juan. And Dr. Evil is a great example of that, where it feels like they were just trying to figure out that character and just throwing things at a dartboard and seeing what it works. It's like, okay, well, now he's got to drink Austin Powers mojo and be sexy, and now he's got to play on a piano, and now he's going to do all these ridiculous things, and that's what we're going to make Dr. Evil as a character, just over the top ridiculous. And it got exhausting by the end of it. Like, I was going to ask, and I'll kind of get into it now as my worst part, like, where did you guys feel that the roller coaster really, like, took the downward turn in this movie?
Wrote it down somewhere in my points here. Let's see here. Mm-hmm. Ryan, you started off as I look for that.
Yeah, this was something even back in the day I noticed with Dr. Evil. Maybe I didn't feel it as much to the degree, but I think he did get a little too absurd in this movie, and he went off the rails, and it just didn't have that same balance of, in the first movie, you still felt like he was trying to be this villain that actually had a goal of, like, just, you know, destroying the world or getting $1 million, whatever it was, you know, his nuclear missile thing that he was drilling into the ground, all that. Like, they had a good balance of, yes, he's supposed to be, like, incompetent at his job, but they're in the right moments where it counts, he is acting like a villain. In the second movie, it's just completely off the rails. Like, he's so goofy and just too, like, not, even though he doesn't have to be super serious, but it's just like, there, he's not grounded at all. It's just completely off the rails. And I do think that kind of cheapens the movie.
Yeah, the irony for me is I wrote Dr. Evil drinks the mojo. Yeah, this part feels like a low point. So what if people, he didn't drink Austin Powers mojo, he drank our mojo. Ryan, when you watched that, did you feel like something was taken from you?
No, it was, well, maybe, you know.
You know what, honestly, that's the right approach. Just shut it down. Yeah. Just shut both of us down with that.
Say, except for maybe my comfort, right? Because it's a very uncomfortable scene to watch.
Yeah. You've got one more movie of this, you know, so just shut it down.
We're almost done, man. We're almost done.
Yeah. Remember the whole thing of you're supposed to say yes to keep it going, and then I just say no.
And it's like, the exact opposite off. For that. But yeah, for me, the moment that really, like, killed the movie for me, it was the moment where I realized, like, oh, maybe this isn't that good as I remember, was one of those big Dr. Evil movies. And ironically, it's the one that's the quoted the most. It's so in the when they're in the volcano layer, they do like a song, the "What if God was one of us?" They cut, and then they go back to another song, which is the "Just the Two of Us," that is just so highly quoted, like throughout pop culture everywhere to this day. And for me, that was the point where it felt like, oh, you're running out of jokes, aren't you? Because you're going back to this well in the same movie so close to each other, where it just felt like, oh, this movie isn't as good as I remember.
Yeah, I think one thing that kind of comes to mind is the jokes didn't feel organic in this movie, where in the first movie, it felt like, I mean, there was sometimes they did this in the first movie too, but way less. First movie, it felt like, here's the plot, and because of what's going on in the plot, you have some jokes coming in. This movie felt like, what do we need to do to get us to, like, we built all the jokes. All the jokes have been written. How do we get from one joke to the next joke? It's not like we're not here and making the joke because the story dictated it. We're here because I wrote "Just the Two of Us" with Mini-Me, and we need to figure out where to put this in the movie. Like, why are they even doing a performance? Like, it doesn't make any sense. You know,
that's a really good point. Like, in the first one, the jokes are there to move the plot forward. But in this one, the plot is there to move the jokes forward, and pretty you can much. Really see it.
Yeah.
I think it's like a lot of directors have said, directing comedy films is like the hardest type of film, because if it's an action film, a car blows up, the movie can suck, but the car blew up, right? It's very easy to see that happen. A drama film, a character can die. Whether it's justifiable or not, it happened. But when a joke lands flat, you can hear a pin drop. And it sucks. And it takes you back. Like, it takes you out. Like, whenever I watch a comedy film and the joke doesn't click, it'll take me a little while for you to win me back over. It's like, no, man, you got to work for this laughter. Yeah.
Let me ask you guys the most serious question I'll ever ask you to. Why did they need to take Fat Bastard's stool sample? I actually never noticed this in the movie. I never even questioned
it. For science?
So what happens in the movie is, for whatever reason, because the tracker was in the toilet, they decide to take a stool sample. And then because they need to do this coffee joke, they find, like, oh, we found this rare fruit that's only on this island. And that's how they find the volcano layer. But, like, that's such a reach. Like, does the CIA just,
they had to reach to get that stool sample.
And Felicity had to reach to get that tractor in there.
Yeah.
There you go.
But it was just like, would they actually do that? Like, what are the odds you're going to get anything of value from a stool sample that just happens to tell you the location of the volcanic layer? Like,
again, the plot moving the jokes forward. We have the coffee joke. We have
Austin Powers drinks the stool sample joke. So we're going to just make up some BS reason.
It's a very situational thing. There's actually two coffee jokes, because even here, and it's interesting because Starbucks in Puerto Rico, I don't think was a big thing in 99. So as a kid, it just didn't click when they show, like, the Starbucks tower. I'm like, what the hell is a Starbucks? And I'm like, wow, Starbucks was a thing in 1999. I didn't even know that. But it's like a lot of these references that they put out there. But what I wanted to say to sort of, like, close off this discussion with this one as we move on to eventually covering Goldmember is that whenever you do a parody film, it needs to treat itself seriously. Like, that is the joke. It's like, I'm a parody film. No, 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 no. It's like, I'm not. I'm better than James Bond. And that's what makes it funny, because you're not better than James Bond. You're messing up left and right. The whole reason that Dr. Evil works so much in the first one is because he wants to destroy the world. He just doesn't know how. He wants to demand a lot of money, but he doesn't know what a lot of money is. In this film, they didn't only not elevate him, they actually took him back, because he never did anything else. You're like, well, I mean, what else are you going to do? And I think you can bring up movies like a Scary Movie and a whole lot of examples that as they went on, people are just like, come on, man, now you're just doing another one of those. And it'll be very interesting to see with Goldmember. I know you just saw it, Keith. So don't be spoiling the podcast, Keith, yet. But Ryan, when's the last time you watched Goldmember?
Legitimately, I'm pretty sure the only time I saw it all the way through was when I first saw it in theaters. I haven't seen the complete movie since 2002 because okay. I just wasn't a fan of it.
And Keith, in your case, be very mindful of the response here. Having watched these movies now, do you feel different about Goldmember when you watched it recently than when you first saw it back in the day?
Yes.
Ooh.
Can't say anything else.
That's a very commanding yes.
Yeah. I'm like, well, Ryan, I was not expecting that. But very happy we talked about this film. It's going to be a little while before we get to the third one. We don't just want to do like back-to-back episodes about these films. But I would love to ask everybody watching and listening, which are other parody films we should consider checking out in the future in the same vein, right? And the Austin Powers is equivalent to like a James Bond, just in a comedy sense, right? Because they are so much a test of their time, but I don't think that the reason some of these jokes fell flat is because they are outdated. Because how many films, like we've covered Breakfast Club, we've covered a whole lot of things in this podcast that are 100% a thing in their time, but they work because they treat it with like a level of respect that I don't think the stool sample that they extracted from Fat Bastard, really, really does that all that well. And Keith, like, if people want to hang out with us, like, what's the best place that they can,
What a segue. Well, yeah.
If you want to come chat with us in a stool sample free environment, please head over to acastofthepast.com/Discord, join our Discord. And like we mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're there talking about everything. You like Pokemon trading card games and not like Ryan's college type of TCG, come chat. Because people are collecting things left and right. You like Lego? Great, we got that too. You like video games? We're all day, every day on the video games, baby. And if you're just eating something great on a Saturday night, send us a picture. We want to see it. And then I'll probably try and make the same thing a couple days later because, hey, slowly I'm turning into Fat Bastard. But that's okay. I haven't eaten a baby yet.
Whoa, 2022. Right. In your case, Ryan, you don't talk about this nearly enough, but aside from A Cast of the Past, you also got some other stuff that you work on, right? You like some of them tiers and ranks?
Yeah, it's true. I have a great YouTube channel called Player Juan where, I'm almost at 7,000 subscribers, and I just did a video talking
Man,
about.
You have a really good Juan impression in some of those videos. Like, it sounds just like him.
Yeah, I just played Half-Life 2 and I was talking about the orange box. But if you also want to go to a completely unrelated website called gameessays.com, that's ESSAYS.com after the word game, that will directly go to my YouTube channel. Where I do a lot of videos on Nintendo stuff, mostly Zelda and Pokemon. And I've been having a lot of fun with it. There's some very in-depth reviews I've done, as well as, more fun like tier lists. So I'm working on reviewing every single main series Zelda game with an in-depth review. Okay. There's Ryan. One out so far, and I've got many more to go, and it's going to take a while, but it's a fun project.
On the spot, right now. Tell me the top three Deku trees.
Deku trees? There's only one Deku tree. You're talking about like characters? Isn't there three? I guess there's only three, technically?
I don't know, Jesus Christ.
Okay.
It's a tree with a mustache. I don't know if they're the same or they're different.
Here we go. All right. Number three, Breath of the Wild Deku Tree. Number two, Wind Waker Deku Tree. Number one, Ocarina Deku Tree.
Hey, and non-jokingly, Ryan did a really good video talking about the Zelda timeline, and that ties into the podcast, because like we've talked about multiple Zelda games, and even after playing Wind Waker, which the episode's available in the archives, I was like, dude, you're talking, like, I know there's like alternate timelines, I need somebody that explains it to me, and he did a really good video about that. You know, you've also covered like rating the different 3D Zelda dungeons, so even if you don't necessarily play a lot of the Zelda games, but you want some context, because like, hey, Zelda, Pokemon, all this stuff is like super relevant now, check out Game Essays, and then Keith will eventually do some sexy stuff that we can also plug, right, Keith?
Yeah, maybe, we'll see.
I mean, you're on the Discord, but people, that is gonna be doing it for this episode. You can leave a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice, whether it be Apple Podcast and all of that. Or if you didn't like this episode, it's kind of like the Fat Bastard Stool sample, then let us know why you hate Keith. It's also part of it. So up until next time, that will be doing it for another exciting stool sample free edition of A Cast
to the
Past.
Keith, give me a sexy... I don't know.
Oh my God. What, do you want a sexy stool sample to go with the rest of what you've been saying?
That's a different channel, man. You can put that on YouTube.
Yeah, that goes on a different video service.